The following may contain NSFW content and is intended for mature audiences. Parental guidance is suggested.
In a world of sorry-ass social justice warriors,
politically correct panty waists,
and really fake news, there still exists brash, bold dudes with balls who tell it like it really is, really was, and really should be. This is the honest, raw, real Dude Say with Jones and Mike. Jones is a 40-something transcendental meditating hockey-playing vegan who's living the bachelor dream in the heart of the city. Mike's a 40-something beer-swilling suburban married father of four who's traded in motorcycles and marathons for a minivan. They say the things real dudes think, and real women want to hear them say. No topics taboo. Nothing's off limits. No holds are barred. About everything from women to pop culture, millennials to race, news, views, family, money, and more. This is the Dude Say when they're unfiltered, unfiltered, and unafraid. Join the show and say some too. 872-701-0999. Tweet at Jones and Mike. See and hear us at jonesandmike.com. This is Dude Say. Dude Say. Dude Say.
Jones, since the advent of texting, you know, sending messages to someone's phone, you have sent me over 1 million texts. But I don't think I've ever gotten a text like this from you. This is soft core porn you've sent me. The two ladies on a boat, bikinis up their keisters, and one, and it's like a shot from behind, and one is like kissing the other one's fat ass. What is this? Why? I mean, thank you.
No, I understand. I figured you would like it. That's
kinda
not why I sent it.
It's
though.
Weird, though. It's real bizarre to get from you, especially. This isn't, you know, some. We all have a friend who sends us weird stuff.
Yes.
We know a dude. We play cards with a dude who will, like, send people, like, things that could get them fired or divorced. Like, right. He sends them gross stuff, like even maybe even illegal stuff.
And he claims to never know where he got it from. He'll get, like, where it's like a horse having sex with a kangaroo. Like, I don't know. People just send this stuff to me.
Yeah, I know.
Like, whenever you ask him, that's always his response. Wait, dude, where do you find this stuff? Clearly, you're looking for it. I don't know. People just send this stuff to me. I don't know where it comes from. Yeah. But you, like, always have it.
And I don't know who sends it. It just appears on my phone every morning. There's bestiality on my phone.
I know. So I knew that.
That's what
this
he says.
Very...
I need to take this out of context for when I am one of Trump's Supreme Court nominees.
Right. Right.
I don't want to lose my shot over that sentence there.
Right. Yes. No, I knew that this would be very much out of the Jones texting realm to send you something like this, but it's a pic that has. I'm angry.
Oh, no. See, you're not angry, like, lately. You used to be the fun-loving guy. Now you're, like, little angry guy. That's not... Well, we're supposed to be... I'm supposed to be angry guy. You're supposed to be fun-loving Jones without a care in the world.
Well, I still am, for the most part.
Well, what happened to you?
It was just... I know both of the girls in that picture.
Well, you know the brunette. So the blonde is kissing the brunette's ass, and they look like they're at sea. Like...
Yes.
It looks like it could be like in South, off of South Beach or something.
It's yes, exactly. So I know both of those girls. Mm. I know the blonde much better than the brunette. And the blonde is a sweetheart. A sweetheart.
She's willing to kiss her friend's ass. So she looks delightful.
And that's why I'm angry. It was one of those things. I've been struggling with this all week because I've been... our group of friends.
How did you get this? Does this just show up on your phone? Where does this come from? Are you like our friend? Where does somebody, I don't know where it comes from.
No, I know where it came from. I know where it came from. We're not going to post the picture. I'm not going to hold it up to the camera so people could go on YouTube and see it.
You're no fun. You're a killjoy,
Jones. I'm not
giving
away this woman's identity. We'll call her for the show. We will call her Alejandra.
Oh, that's very exotic. She looks very exotic. She's into exotic things.
Yes. So Alejandra makes...
I don't think I can say that.
Bad choices with selfies. Selfies that don't represent her.
Oh, this doesn't represent her. This is like the like her alter ego sense.
Yes. Yes.
Mm.
And it's one of these things that, like, if I didn't know her or I just knew her in passing and saw the pic, I'd be like, oh, she's crazy. And I would just move on from it. But I see this pic and I just get stuck on it. And I'm thinking to myself, not for the reasons you think I would get stuck on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, I'm thinking to myself, like, this is not the results that she wants in life. And I know the results she is a Netflix and chill girl. Have you heard that term?
No.
Netflix and chill.
That's, I think, like, I'm a Netflix and chill girl.
That's, well, that's just kind of like, that's a thing that the kids are using when they want to just, I've heard them describe themselves as like someone who just wants to just on the movies, watch a movie and chill out. I'm Netflix and chill. She's kind of more of a Netflix and chill, but there's some, and I think it's the phone.
Mm.
I think it's the selfies. Mm-hmm. I think it's discombobulated her brain chemistry.
Yeah.
She thinks that in order to snare a man, to get to Netflix and chill, she has to be video vixen. And now, 9 times out of 10, I would say, well, I don't really know this person. So if they want to be a video vixen, even if it's not going to yield them the results they want to yield, go be a video vixen. But, like, I know this person. And this is not, this is one of the stronger pictures I've ever seen. But it's not completely out of the realm of selfies and Snapchats that go out into the world.
Right on. So are you saying that she's putting this stuff out there because she's trying to attract a mate, a man who she then can turn on a dime and be like, okay, so now that we're together, we're going to stay in and not do any of the crazy shit you saw me doing previously. We're going to stay in and watch Netflix and hang out and eat bonbons together.
Yes. And it's funny because I know a guy who claims that when he started dating his now wife, she claimed, like, and just so you know, sometimes I like girls, so I might kind of bring that into the picture. And this guy has now been with this woman for 10 years, married. And he's like, never once. That was just totally put on a worm, on the hook, hung out there, and tried to pull me in.
Wait, so before they were married, she was like, yeah, every now and then we may do a threesome.
Yeah, I might be kind of open to that sort of thing.
And then, and he thought, oh, that's cool. In fact, I want to bring you home to mom. I wonder about that dude, honestly.
Well, it pulled him in. It pulled him in and pulled him in long enough that he became a Netflix and chill guy. So I think that is part of the mentality of Alejandra, is in order to get a guy, you can't be. And she's a cute girl, funny.
Oh, yeah.
Quirky.
Mm-hmm.
She could get a guy without this.
She's got a fat ass, too. She looks like she's probably into Brothers. She's into Brothers, right?
No.
No.
I've been there for a couple years and no.
Wow. I mean, that body looks like she's working on attracting bros. So, good for her.
Okay. But I...
But you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how they do it, but there's some way that, like, you can work on, you know, attracting the race that you want. And it seems like I don't know what that diet is, that booty diet, but some people know that diet, dude. It's got to be online. We'll Google it.
You can Google it.
We'll Google that recipe, whatever that is.
Right. So I think I've now lost my train of thought. But I believe that is her idea, that if in order to meet a guy, I have to be hot. And I'm looking at, it's when you know somebody and you're just like, oh man, I don't want to step in, but, like, I don't want to see you keep doing this. And I did, at one time I did even try to somewhat step in.
Ooh, you did an intervention on her? And how did you broach the subject? And in what context?
Well, see, here's the thing. Her Monday through Friday persona is so different from her weekend persona. And just in general, you cannot do that. You're not able to pull it off. Like, no? For anybody.
You can't do the Clark Kent and Superman, you know, dualism?
I don't think you can consistently pull that off. So there was actually one time where I said, like, well, actually, one time where I approached her, Monday through Friday, she's very business casual. And I went up to her once and I was like, you know, I think this is your look. Like, you're just glowing today, the business casual thing. And she even said, she goes, you know, I like dressing like this. And I was just, I was thinking about this this week. I think I'm more comfortable like this. And I was just like, all right, there's the seed. I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, nice. That was really artful. Good job. Very tactful.
Well, see, it's one of those things where, like, if I think to myself, like, okay, maybe some of the younger guys that I play hockey with, like, if I showed them certain pictures, of Alejandra, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I'd love to be introduced. Sure, blah, blah, blah. You know, great.
Right.
And then if I showed some other pictures, they'd be like, tell me the whole story.
Why?
You know what I mean?
Oh.
That they would, well, you don't want to, like.
They'd see the crazy stuff and be like, oh, I don't know.
I need to know. Yeah, I just can't step. Because if someone's pulling you aside and going, hey, I have someone I want to introduce to you. You're not going, hey, I have someone I want to introduce to you for a one night stand.
Yeah.
You're going, hey, I want to introduce someone to you that I think you should spend time with. So if you present the crazy South Beach persona.
Yeah.
Crazy South Beach image, that's typically not an image that someone will go, oh, okay, yeah, Netflix and chill, I see it.
Babo, you got chlamydia already, right? I got somebody you got to meet.
And ultimately, yes, ultimately that's, I think the phone and the selfies have discombobulated her brain chemistry, and she can't see this presentation. Now this, the picture that you're looking at is something that happens somewhat regularly. On the weekends, she will post on social media all these crazy pics and her being out in the club and just like grinding away.
Oh no.
Like, insane. And then by 9:30 the next morning, she will have erased all those pictures.
Oh geez.
Now, I get it when someone does that once or twice. And then they wake up the next morning and they go, oh, my God, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Or I shouldn't smoke that or drank that or whatever it was.
Right.
But when it's something that you're doing every weekend, there's something else that you're addicted to. And I think it's the phone. I think it's the discombobulated brain chemistry and the idea that you have to put out this Kylie Jenner completely controlled, I'm always sexy persona. Because like the responses that she gets on these pictures, it's just like meatheads who are like, damn, or fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
again, just for the record, you think that she's putting this out there because she wants a mate. She wants a man. She wants a husband, a family, white picket fence, suburban, whatever.
I was out having a drink with her about a week and a half ago, and she was saying just about that same thing.
Wow.
Saying, you know, oh, no. I like to sit on the couch and chill out. I love to do that. Like she was going into that. We were talking about someone else who was looking for that and how she would be all about that. No, I know that.
Well, wait a second now. Is it possible that she's actually this club chlamydia, weekend party girl life? Maybe that's really her, and she's actually bullshitting you when she's like, I'm a Netflix and chill girl. I just give me a cat and a book and an Afghan and Netflix, and I'm set. Maybe that's like what she's projecting in certain company. With you, for example, she perceives you as less the club guy. So with you, she's fronting like she's about that stuff, but she's really into, you know, twerking on brothers, you know, on South Beach.
Well, no, only because like the group of friends that we all have are largely women, so she wouldn't have to hide from that. And I know she has two circles of female friends herself that she knew before I had even met her. And over time, the like sensible, more grounded friends I noticed have drifted off.
Mm.
And she's kind of going more the club route, even though she's constantly talking about like, she'll go out with guys. And when they don't commit almost immediately, she becomes frustrated. So it's all, again, I bring it back to these goddamn phones. I think there's also that instant gratification. Like right. When she does, the phone world is more satisfying to her because she can take the pictures and the videos and get some meathead to go, damn.
Right, right.
And get the instant reward. But then when she has to sit down and work her way through a conversation with someone, that's when the struggle kicks in. And normally, look, I would just be like, oh, I don't know this person. I don't care. But I know this person and I'm like, I really believe the Netflix and chill part of you. But you're so addicted to the like 15 or 16 year old mentality of I must be hot. I must paralyze men with my sex appeal that they can think of nothing else.
But and again, like if she was just sitting on the boat with, you know, the sunset behind her and some friends and she's in a bikini, but she wasn't like, you know, with her legs spread, she would still look, I'm sure, attractive and appealing. And it's sexy, but it's like it's tactful and it's not tacky like this where you're kissing someone's ass on a boat. It doesn't even look like they're like it looks like they're posing like it's a model shoot. It doesn't look like it's fun.
No, 95% of the pictures that they take are posed, completely posed. I've been out at places where I've watched them do it, where they'll be having normal conversations, and then all of a sudden it's like, let's take a picture, and then it becomes this series of like 17 times. They're like, let me see it.
Oh, jeez.
No. Again, okay, look this way. And then they just act. They do the Kylie Jenner thing where they're acting like, paparazzi is around us. People feel the need to take pictures of us.
Yeah.
We're just doing our own thing. And they work so goddamn hard at it. One of their friends apparently is like Instagram famous.
Oh,
and
really?
Like
good for
converses
her.
Converses with like Vinny from Jersey Shore.
Oh,
or something
now
stupid.
That's high. That's high esteem.
I know.
Right there.
This is what's got me worried.
I have a friend. She lives, digital friend, a virtual friend. But she's along the lines of what I'm describing. Maybe this girl should become, where she'll be out on Lake Michigan on a boat. She's got big jugs. She'll be in a swimsuit, but she's not like, you know, she's just hanging out with friends, and she looks very cute, very attractive. She's got a place down, you know, in the West Loop. She seems like she's living a great single lifestyle. Seems like she wants the Netflix and chill thing, but isn't like, you know, spreading her legs and stuff online. So every now and then you see something where it's like, oh, well, that's a bit revealing. But she's, you know, just a normal girl, normal woman now that she's in her 30s. So I think we have to introduce her to your friend and then they can compare notes on how to be sexy and appealing without being a whore.
Get it to, so you're suggesting to rather than change full throttle, you're saying to taper down, introduce this idea of tapering down the
right.
South Beach sex appeal.
That's right. So just like you, very artful, very tactful, you planted the kernel. It wasn't fertile soil that time, but you start introducing friends into her, you know, world that are kind of more grounded.
Yeah, you know, that would be one way to do it. The one thing, though, that I think that is the largest combatant to any of that is the selfie phone culture, though. The more and more that I'm thinking about this, even when I'm speaking to you, because now what you're saying is, okay, so you could introduce this other friend and kind of taper it down a bit. They're not as Instagram or Snapchat addicted. But I've also noticed with Alejandra, when she's talking to female friends that we all mutually know, the second that, and this is bizarre, I don't understand this, and my friends don't understand this either. The second that someone that is married or in a relationship offers her advice, her take is, well, you already have someone, so you kind of don't know what you're talking about.
Interesting.
Which I think is so bizarre that the instant gratification that you just get from like Meathead Nation out in selfie land carries so much weight with you. But then you can talk to people that know you that are in what you could venture a guess are
right.
successful relationships. And then you're going,
Yeah.
I don't think so. There's some holes in your game, so, that being a relationship.
Is it possible that she's just not honest with herself, and she's a microcosm of the greater society we live in now, that people really aren't honest with themselves? They are one thing, but they now have the opportunity to present as if they're something else. So they take that opportunity. Facebook is just a vapid, weird land of falseness, false and fakeness, right? Where you're presenting like everything's perfect. Like, I mean, and I have seen people, like, now I'm getting to the age where, like, people that we know are getting divorced. So it's very sad, very, very sad to see. And some of them were not surprised at. Others were like, wow, we're shocked. They're separated or they're cohabitating and trying to figure it out how they're going to separate. And that's the other aspect of living out here in Ivory Tower land, is that in order to stay, like, it takes a lot of financial planning, because singularly these people can't afford to be here. So moving from joint to separate and still keeping their kids in the same district and all that stuff, it's like a real mess. So sometimes they're getting a divorce, but they stay in the same place for like a year or more as they try to figure it out. So that's all like kind of happening out here or whatever. But leading up to it, like, they were going on vacations and all of these great, you know, photos we're seeing, and you think everything's great. And then it turns out behind closed doors, they were sleeping in separate rooms. So, and that's a depressing thing to consider. So isn't it like maybe she is just a microcosm of everybody? And social media is really kind of the false lens that we see the world through now. Everyone's presenting like everything's perfect and rosy, and this Superman persona of themselves. But really, they're the Clark Kent behind closed doors. Sad and lonely and considering suicide.
What? You went a couple more I was about to jump on board with you and go, yeah, I agree. And then you went a couple more layers. So you peel back a couple of those layers. No, I would totally agree with you. I mean, there's no doubt that there is an attempt at manicuring an image. And I guess my takeaway from it, and why I'm like irritated, not angry was too strong, I'm irritated by it, is it's so unnecessary. It's so unnecessary. And I almost sound like I'm like this person's father by being like, no, you're just good enough on your own.
Right.
But like, it is so hard to watch adults now. Adults. Like, if your kids were struggling with this, I would be like, well, you know, your daughters, they're getting to be teenagers. It's like, oh, they're trying to figure themselves out. It's a weird time.
You're emotionally stunted still, and even mentally stunted until you're in your 20s.
Yeah, but now when you're looking at adults, and it's that same thing. Like, it is amazing to think how crushing it would be now to the average person if a picture of them with a cold sore went on Facebook.
Right, right.
In a group photo of like 15 people where probably no one will ever really pay attention to you, but you know you have a cold sore in that photo. That's now devastating.
Yeah, and that's what I love about you, Jones. You will put self-deprecating stuff out there. I do. I make fun of myself. I throw my crazy rants out there. You either like it, you don't. Actually, more people than not are not liking it. And you know what? And they don't like it. Like, I don't see any interaction at all. That's really what this girl needs. She needs the meatheads and everybody to stop interacting. Like, that's how you can, I think, police this stuff. Is you just don't like, don't share, don't comment. Leave them alone.
Oh, I never do. Now, would it be appropriate if I went to her parents and told them that she needs to start docking her phone at night?
You know what? That's something that we do in our house with the children. Yes, I think that she needs to dock it by 10:30, same as my 14-year-old.
You know what, dude? And now, I'm not kidding. I'm actually serious. The next time I see something like this in a social media forum where I can comment, I think that's how I should respond. Among all the damn and fire. And oh, and another thing is that I learned this week, there's another term out there, and none of the other millennials knew it, but we looked it up and figured it out. Groceries. Have you heard of groceries?
No. I mean, yes, like, but not the way you're describing it, I'm sure.
You want to eat that ass or something? Whoa. Like groceries.
What?
You just type in groceries. So among the damn and fire and groceries, I should just type in, you need to start docking your phone.
You really need to start docking your phone at 10:30.
Right, yes.
Dot. ...
Yes. Daddy's your phone.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. I have to text my daughter when it's time. I text her, dock it now. So that's what you need to do.
I need to yes, I do. I do specifically on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays.
Daddy says
I'll,
dock
give
it.
Her till, I'll give her till 11:30, and then before I go to bed, I'll just text Alejandra, dock it now.
So you, and you're not above interventions. You're the type of guy who will do this.
It's not something like I relish. I'm not one of those. There are those people out there like, hey, man, I call him like I see him. I tell everybody what I think. I think that can be too much. But this particular photo, I was just like, oh, no, no, no. What are you doing?
I mean, is it possible that you need to lighten up and just get off of people's asses? Why do you got to? No. Who died and made you? Who died and made you the boss, Jones?
How many times have I done it? Like, I'm not doing it to this other. I'm not doing it to the other girl in the photo. She could very well be a hopeless cause. I don't really know her. I'm not close to her.
Yeah, so I would like to get to know the brunette, honestly, in that photo.
Well, you need to control yourself, all right? But I know. Here's the thing. When you know the person. And you can sit there like I'm looking, you know, you even like outside of just friends and family, like even this week, you see there, you know, there was an article about Johnny Depp.
Mm, yeah, we'll get into that.
Spiraling into financial ruin. Could there not be someone in his world that would have said, hey, Johnny, some of this stuff, not so good. Michael Jackson.
Right,
hey.
Right.
Some of this stuff, not so good.
So everyone, everyone, large, small, big, little, rich, poor, we all need like a life cop.
It's not. Yes.
It takes a village to keep us all on the straight and narrow. Someone's got to shame us.
Every once in a while, someone from the village, I think, should speak up. Especially if. You know, if all of the villagers are noticing something and nobody says anything, then what does that really do to a person? I'll even remove the social aspect of it, like interacting at nightclubs or with coworkers or what have you. I knew a guy who was in a improv troupe. He's still in the same group, and he used to, very funny guy, very funny on stage, very quick-witted. And when he, and this will only mean anything to anyone that's watching on YouTube. If you're listening just on a podcast, you're going to get a little gypped here, but whatever. Go to YouTube. This guy used to go on stage, and in every scene with every character, people would laugh. But he would do this thing where he could be a police officer, and he would do this. Bill! You know what I pulled you over for?
Oh, my God. He's like he's licking his face. Oh, my God.
He'd be a doctor, and he would go, ma'am, we went through your tests.
Oh, jeez. What is that?
Next scene, he could be a father. Son, I want to play baseball with you, but... And he always did this thing where he scrunched his face and obsessively licked his lips from nose to chin again and again. He just did that.
Oh, my God. Like he was having some sort of an attack or something.
Yes. He did this on stage for 2 years before someone went, God, it's funny. Dude, you're hilarious on stage. I'm just curious. You always bring that same affectation to every character. And he was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no. Oh, God.
No. Clue that his body just had some, he, you know, it's probably some anxiety, and he didn't realize that his body was doing this.
Oh my God. Like
every
he was stroking
he
out.
Speak, and he was spasming. And they let him do it for 2 years. So I understand why some people would hear what I have to say and go, dude, you're just being nosy. Shut up, Oldie Olsen. Go to the side.
Jones.
But what I need you
to be honest, dude. Was that guy you?
No, it was not.
That guy was not you.
It was not. I watched him perform for those 2 years and thought, like, yeah, he. I mean, I always thought, like, oh, it's funny. It gets a laugh. And then sometimes I did think to myself, like, well, it's kind of a cheap out. Like, you're right. always doing something bizarre
right.
to, like, get the laugh rather than be the genuine character, because I thought he was making a choice. But no, he was just doing this thing that nobody said anything about.
So
and
I think
and then all of a sudden, once he was aware of it, he could stop it.
I think I've identified a serious flaw in Second City's coaching methodology. If it's good enough for a stand-up comedian to watch tapes of themselves, why in the world would they not have sketch troops watching videos of their sketches? Is that verboten?
No, I wasn't in his group. I'm kind of surprised over the course of, like, 2 years, however long it was. It wasn't like it was 3 weeks. It was like 2 years that he never saw a video.
Do they videotape all of your performances so you can, like, review it, like, with this explicit purpose of, like, critiquing it, seeing how you could have done things better, seeing how your acting was, you know, obviously faking, like, there's props and stuff?
Right. Not week in and week out, but in terms of when you had those, like, quarterly shows or whatever, I want to say that those were recorded. Now, I'm trying to remember, it's so long ago now. Was that just friends recording? But at the same time, he was someone who was very into comedy, still is. I'm surprised that it wouldn't have been at some point recorded earlier where he could be like, whoa, 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 whoa.
How come nobody told me?
Right.
I do that thing? That's so bizarre.
So that's why I'm saying, like, I know it may seem to some like, well, it's none of your business, shut up. But then there, I've known this girl for 2 years now. And that was just my, should I be a villager that speaks up moment.
Yeah. Or when should the villagers shut up? When should the villagers shut up? Or maybe it's just, look, if you're in your little world and you don't know who the village idiot is, you may be the village idiot. I've realized I was a village idiot many times. That moment when you look around the village, can't see the idiot, you're the idiot. So we all have to tell the village idiot every now and then, and we all take turns being the village idiot. So let me ask you, let me flip the script on you. When somebody comes and kind of gives you some gentle advice, and it's somebody who's, you know, maybe even somebody that you don't really know all that well, like it's not me, or it's not... you know, your sister or, you know, one of your close friends. It's somebody like from the office or from jiu-jitsu or something. How are you going to take that? Have you ever taken, like, you know, a cue from someone who's kind of mentioned, like, oh, whatever. Like, for me, it would be like, yeah, you're kind of a loudmouth. And I'd be like, ooh, don't be a loudmouth anymore, or don't be a loudmouth around that guy or whatever. I mean, I get these all the time. Or maybe I hear it all the time. Some people are better at hearing it than others.
In terms of behavior, I don't think I've ever received anything like that. Now, sometimes people will say, like, individual, like, for individual moments, like if they hear something that I say on a show or at a party or something like that, like, man, are you sure you really want to?
Oh, really?
Say
people
that?
Have asked you, like, hey,
or be careful about that.
Really?
Be careful about that.
Oh, no. You?
Yeah. Oh yeah. But it was individualized conversation. It was about maybe something that an idea that I was expressing. Mm-hmm. It was never about the larger you.
Somebody was like, yeah, that idea that, everyone is born knowing everything and then you have to spend your life relearning it. That whole crazy ass theory of yours. Did somebody take and poke holes in that? Cause they should.
No, I've been told about some of the stuff. If I say anything critical, not critical, but if I speak in any way that would be challenging to, like, trans, I've had people be like, you gotta be careful about that now, even though it's like, I'm not anti-trans, but if I just instantly go, hey, wait a minute, what's this bill about? And then I talk about it. I've had people be like, dude, just let it go. People get really touchy about that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like, you're transcendental meditating. You are trans. Okay. You're one of the OG trans that I know.
Right. No, technically you're right. So, yeah, I haven't gotten that, like, you're doing this one aspect of your life all wrong and you need to turn it around. But here's the thing, though. I think by even doing this show, I think it kind of shows, like, I'm one of these introspective people where, like, I am... outside of talking to you all the time, I am talking to myself. Last week, I was referencing a point that I was making on the show where I was in bed arguing with the ceiling up above me and pointing.
Like, yeah, yeah, I know.
I'll have it out with myself.
Right. You were pissed about Joe Biden and the bevel of beauties laying with you. They were all rolling their eyes. Here he goes again.
Here he goes again. The Biden thing. He knows how to kill the mood.
All right, so you brought it up, and so while we're talking about personal responsibility, having a life cop, somebody in your ecosystem who can kind of gently steer you in the right direction, keep you on track, celebrities in the news this week, a yin and a yang, who can serve as beacons for us all, frankly, Johnny Depp, George Clooney, a tale of two different, very different people, up next.
In a world of beaten down middle-aged men,
frizzy panty waists,
and triggered snowflakes,
two dudes
say the shit you say,
think,
and feel.
And now,
we're ready to blow this shit up.
Announcing Jones and Mike,
version 2.0.
Coming to a phone,
car,
or computer near you.
Live video and audio.
Anywhere you are.
Any way you like it.
Anytime you need.
Words that sear through your mind like tiny little missiles of brutal truth that make you go, or freeing men from the malaise of middle age, giving women the straight dope on what their dudes think.
It's the shit dudes say
that women want to hear.
Go to www.patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
P-A-T-R-E-O-N.
Patreon.com/Jones and Mike.
Support the show.
Join our community.
Get rewards.
And help save Spaceship Earth from the hordes of fake news bullshit artists.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Get the show for not much dough.
Dude Say with Jones and Mike.
Rated M for mature audiences.
Jones, you really are one of my celebrity watchers in my life. You sent me information about Johnny Depp. He's going broke. Is that the story? I thought that he was in the news because he was like the 11th celebrity, I think, this year who's called for the assassination of the POTUS with the mostus. But he's getting outed by his financial advisors for basically living like an extravagant douche.
Well, yeah, that was, it was funny. Earlier this week, before the whole Trump must be assassinated talk, why people even dive into that? It's just, I don't know. The word, if you're a celebrity and the word assassination comes to mind,
yeah,
zip the lips. Just stop. Don't go any further. It's not going to work out for you.
Although I got to hand it to him. He was like in England or whatever, where they just, they don't like Trump. Fine. And so he actually hearkened back to John Wilkes Booth, though, and talked, hey, man, it's not like an actor has never killed the president before. Maybe it needs to happen again. I actually applauded that. I was like, very good. Didn't expect Johnny Depp to know any history at all.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I guess that's one way of kind of turning it to be a little bit positive. But earlier in the week, I saw, and I had, this was still at a time where it was Alejandro's story was fresh in my mind. And then I saw
Muy caliente.
I saw a pic of Johnny Depp, and it was under the headlines of Johnny Depp going broke, blah, 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 which I hadn't seen before. But I guess now there are email exchanges that have gone public this week. I guess his former management group, The Management Group, which I feel like could be a better name. I think that is the name of it.
Unless they pronounce it The Management Group, like it's the Ohio State. Right.
So The Management Group, I believe Johnny is trying to sue them for $25 million in terms of screwing up his funds or something like that. So there have been these email exchanges that were released about all of the ways that, he's spending his money and how they're interacting and blah, blah, blah. And now TMG is now countersuing him. So as I was reading through the article, I was just thinking to myself, like, this is another example, whether you're a layman or whether you're a celebrity, like I have this idea that everybody, and particularly powerful people, celebrities or just powerful business people, you need to keep someone in your circle, close in your circle, that you regularly touch base with. Fireman, policeman, teacher, someone that has a job that's on a fixed income, but they have a pension, they have benefits. So right. They have a good life now, but they also have gone down a path where they also have an eye to the future.
Right.
Whenever you talk to a fireman or policeman or teacher, they're always kind of like, hey, okay, so when's my out time here?
Yeah.
When am I done working?
Yeah, I know. And that drives me nuts. Every single one of them is talking about when they get to retire. And it's like, why are you doing that job then? I thought you shouldn't you kind of dig what you're doing? Like, you're doing a fairly important job. So why don't you dig it at all? Why are you always talking about, like, 4 more years till I don't have to teach these third graders anymore? And then what are you going to do?
Right. But if you are, the advantage of that mentality is if you are a off-the-rails celebrity or off-the-rails successful whatever, you at least have someone they can kind of keep you grounded because they kind of have that eye to the future of like, because in order to be able to get out at that year marker, you can't just like live like a maniac either.
Right.
So when I was reading all this stuff about Johnny Depp, I was like, dude, the guy needs to have like some kind of fireman in his life.
That's why I kept something. You around, Jones.
Clearly
you're very grounded. You don't mind speaking up. You keep people on the straight and narrow. For a powerful man like me, you're perfect.
Yes, a very powerful man like you. So, as I was going through these emails, I just was floored. Dude, the guy spends, they're going back and forth. So he apparently, the head of the management group is this guy named Joel Mandel. They're going back and forth. And it turns out, so they're going through Depp's spending habits. He spends over $30,000 a month on wine.
Oh, that's reasonable. It's not even 400 grand a year. What's your problem?
So $30,000 a month on wine. So there were emails going back and forth between him and this Mandel guy. And this Mandel warned him at one point, like, hey, take it easy on the holiday spending. And they told Depp, you know, just, you know, look a little bit more realistic at your income and your expenses and work together and make sure that these things are in balance. Depp essentially wrote back, nah.
Nah, find a way to make it work.
Right. He writes back, Depp writes back, doing my very best on holiday spending, but there is only so much I can do as I need to give my kiddies and family as good a Christmas as possible, obviously within reason. Depp also then went on to say, what else can I do? You want me to sell some art? I will if you want me to send something else. Sure, I got bikes, cars, property, books, paintings, and some semblance of a soul left, where would you like me to start? Like, I guess he started getting angry about having to do any of these
things. He's like a petulant child arguing at his parents.
Exactly. So he goes, he then writes, so Mandel responded with like, hey, well, one of the best things that you could do was to sell your private jet. And Depp wrote back, a commercial flight with paparazzis in tow, that would be a fucking nightmare of monumental proportions.
Yeah, man. Could you imagine Johnny Depp like trying to find overhead space for his carry-on?
I know.
Hilarious. Sitting so with we the plebeians, forget it.
Right. So then he writes, I don't like being in this situation, but there wasn't a whole lot of choice as the rum diary was a sacrifice and we knew would be happening. And the last proper paycheck I got was Public Enemies. I will do my best, Joel. Now, I looked up his movie career stats, like in terms of what he got paid on movies.
Right.
Now, I couldn't find out what he got paid on Public Enemies, which he considered to be a real payday. But he obviously put down the pay that he received on the rum diaries. Which he did back in 2011, $15 million.
That sounds like not enough. What is the Rum Diary? Is that like a prequel to Pirates or something? It sounds like something that has to do with that Pirates of the Caribbean stuff.
Yeah, I don't even remember. But they show Alice in Wonderland. He made $50 million. The first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, $10 million. The second one, $20 million. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, $18 million. The Lone Ranger, $20 million. Transcendence, $20 million. Mordecai, $18 million. Like, I don't even understand. Like, really, at that point, like, he doesn't even have to make investments. He doesn't even have to make investments at this point.
Meanwhile,
he just has to keep making movies and then just like find a mattress giant enough to put $18 million in there.
Yeah, he could just live on the interest, you would think, of $200 million. Like, I think his net worth was like $200 million. Although, again, it sounds like that's tied up in like properties. That's not liquidity. That's, you know, that's stuff he can't touch. And it's depreciating assets, the whole lot of them.
Well, right? Okay. Well, depending on the land, it might not be.
Very good, especially out there in Hollyweird. Like, you know, the Hollywood Hills house is probably not depreciating. They're paying more than what you're asking for out there. In fact, things in California are so off the rails. I was reading this week that they're now buying houses sight unseen. Like, it could be like all the copper could be missing on the inside. You don't know. You're literally bidding on a house and overpaying on a house that you haven't seen yet.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. But that's crazy the home prices are out here. Out here, you know, you list a house for $400,000 and you're happy if you walk away with $380,000. And you're giving like $15,000 for closing costs or something. Out there, you'll get like $450,000.
Okay, here's how crazy this son of a bitch is. So I have a list of some of his expenditures. All right. So he spent over $75 million to acquire and improve and furnish 14 residences, including a 45-acre chateau in the south of France, a chain of islands in the Bahamas, multiple houses in Hollywood, multiple houses in one area, several penthouse lofts in downtown Los Angeles, and a fully functioning house farm in Kentucky. He spent over $18 million. He spent over $18 million on a yacht. He spent over $18 million on a 150-foot luxury yacht, $30,000 a month, as I mentioned previously, in wine that he had flown to him around the world for his personal consumption. He's consuming $30,000 a month in wine.
That's nice. There was somebody in my neighborhood who was like telling me that they're part of like the Cooper's Hawk Wine Club or something.
Yeah, I know someone that does that.
And it's like $300 a month or something. And I'm like, what the fuck are you spending? What? That much a year on wine? It's crazy. Like, they were even mentioning it, like, might have to tighten up our budget and get rid of the wine club. I'm like, the what? And then they tell me it's like how much? $300 a month or something crazy. I'm like, you're nuts, dude.
Are they getting, like, cases of wine or, like, how many bottles?
Dude, I don't know. I think, like, if you like wine, I think you can drink, like, you and your old lady could knock back a couple of bottles in a night.
I think that you can. Yeah, yeah. Which I can't. I can't. That shit gives
me. No, I hate that stuff. But, you know, I could see how you could spend $300 a month in wine. Now, how much was he spending? $30,000 a month?
Yes. A month. Unwind for his own personal consumption.
He looks like he's like always on a bender, that guy. Like, it's amazing. That's why he wants to give his kids the best possible Christmas ever, because I think each Christmas could be his last.
Well, okay, so speaking of his kids, he spends over $150,000 a month on full-time security for his children. Now, if you're going to be extravagant, I guess that's kind of a responsible way of being extravagant. I mean, you're spending over almost $1.5 million per year to protect your kids. That's a chunk of change. He spends over $300,000 a month on a staff of approximately 40 full-time employees.
Yeah, that seems low. I don't think he's paying his employees enough, honestly.
No, I did the math on that, and it would come out to about the average of about like $90,000 a year. Yeah.
Really? He's really paying them quite well.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to double check your math.
When I initially looked at that, I was like, oh, that doesn't seem right. But then when I did the math, I was like, no, he does seem to be paying them pretty decent.
Yeah, but you're not figuring in employee taxes and all of that stuff,
true,
dude.
True.
So
true,
they are not each bringing home $90,000. No way. But at any rate.
So, and then he spent on millions on like Warhols and Basquiats and all sorts of expensive jewelry. But my favorite expenditure, and this is why you need to keep a fireman, a policeman, or a teacher in your life at all times.
Yeah, all union people, though. Can't you just have like a somebody non-union? Like,
No, it's got to be
a union person.
It's got to be union because everything's hardwired in. The whole plan is hardwired in. You have to have someone like that that you know and respect, that has everything about them. Their now and their future is hardwired in. I'm not saying that your future has to be hardwired in, But to have someone like that is able to pull you in.
Mm. All right.
So his, my favorite expenditure is over $3 million to blast a specially made cannon.
Yeah.
That housed the ashes of author Hunter S. Thompson over Aspen, Colorado.
Why was that so much expensive? I don't understand that.
I don't understand that. But at that point, when I read that expenditure, I thought, if you had that fireman in your life, they have the right to go up to you. Like, for example, let's say all of a sudden I became off the rails successful. Hmm. And I
more was saying, successful, you mean?
More successful.
Yeah.
Vastly more successful. And all of a sudden I just had this idea. I'm talking to, let's say I'm talking to Andy Fireman. Mm. And
great guy. Love him.
Yes. Very grounded, likes planning, perfect person to have in your life with regard to what I've just been saying.
Totally conservative with his dough. I'm imagining, like, just if you invite him somewhere, he comes an hour early.
Yes. So
the perfect Jiminy Cricket.
Imagine that I said to him, so, Jones, what are you doing? You know, you got any trips coming up? Well, yeah, actually, I'm flying to England next month. Oh, you're going to England? What are you going to England for? Well, yeah, I'm going to England, and I'm going to Brixton, actually. And I'm having a cannon especially made and delivered to Brixton. And I'm going to take the ashes of David Bowie, and I'm going to fire them. And it's all been approved by the Brixton City Council.
Awesome.
I'm going to fire them over the city of Brixton.
That would be sweet. You owe it to David to do that.
And then if Andy were to go, oh, wow, that sounds great, man. I'm just curious, though. How much does a thing like that cost? And I were to say $5 million. He at that point has every right to go pay for all of my kids' school.
I mean,
if you're going to spend $5 million on firing David Bowie's ashes over the city of Brixton, first you must establish and fully fund a college fund for all three of my sons. You have the right.
He would be able to talk sense into you and be like, well, wait a second now. Johnny Depp was able to do this whole gig for like $2 million less. Why are you spending five when Hunter S. Thompson's cannon was only three?
Yeah, but that was all all domestic. I'm talking about international cannon.
Right, flying the cannon over there. You got to fly it on a Gulfstream 5. You can't do a coach.
No, absolutely. It's a different thing. But I'm saying, like, you need someone who can be like, yeah, and I know I have no reason to ask for your money, but I'm asking for your money. Pay for my kid's school.
Right.
Like, something that, like, snaps you back into it.
Right. So, Johnny will, I predict, will be dead within 5 years. Now,
I don't think that's a bad prediction.
Yeah, I'm not pulling for it, but he's counting on, although it sounds like in his personal emails with the management group, I love how it's not even the Mandel group. It's two brothers named Mandel, and they go, no, the M should be management, we think. Because if your name is Mandel, I'm trusting you with my money. This guy is not even he's not even box office gold or anything. He's one of the worst bets in Hollywood, apparently. Like, there's a list that they do annually of the worst, like, ROI. And he actually leads the list, according to Forbes. Johnny Depp is Hollywood's most overpaid actor for the second year in a row. Apparently, his ROI is $2.80 at the box office for every dollar he gets paid on a film. So, outside of the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise, is it Caribbean or Caribbean? Caribbean.
I always like to say Caribbean I always say Caribbean when I'm talking about the Caribbean islands, but it seems like whenever I reference like that Disney thing, I always say Caribbean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I adjust to both.
Right. So he's leads with $2.80 return for every dollar. Will Smith second. This surprised me, although he has had some clunkers recently.
He's fallen off for sure.
You know what it was? It was when he did that movie where he was in a bathroom. He lived in a bathroom with his son. Like, they were Poe.
Oh, I liked that one.
That was whack. He was living, and then he's raising his kid in like a men's room.
Yeah, that kid. Well, no, he wasn't raising his kids in the men's room. They spent one night in the men's room.
Oh, really? All the trailers were like just showed them in the men's room.
Showed him like curling up with his boy in like a stall. No, that was like one scene. What was that movie? I love that movie.
I don't know.
And then like at the end, like he gets the job and he's like applauding himself, like he finally did it. And like my eyes welled up. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I love that movie.
From the men's room to the penthouse.
The guy's from Chicago. The guy the story's about.
Outhouse to penthouse. Yeah, Oprah's show was still on, so she was all about that rags-to-riches story.
Yeah. She had him on and everything.
Well, apparently that mother only brings in $5 for every dollar he's paid, right? So he's second on the list. Third on the list. Maybe you can guess who's third on the list, Jones.
Third on the list.
Most overpaid people.
Well, I wouldn't say it's Vin Diesel or The Rock. They seem to be in a good space right now. Certainly The Rock. But it's got to be some big Hollywood, like blockbuster type. I will go with...
He's hot.
Ryan Reynolds?
Channing Tatum. Oh. I don't think he's hot. He's not really my cup of tea, but apparently...
Yeah, I don't really think of him like in that status of Johnny Depp. Will Smith.
Yeah, huh. Apparently he had some clunkers, so he brings in $6 for every buck he's paid, even despite the success of the Magic Mike franchise. Next on the list, you're not going to know it, he's not a blockbuster guy. And in fact, I have railed against him previously. Actually, I rail against people who hold him up on a pedestal.
Who?
Will Ferrell. $6.50 for every dollar he's paid.
You know what, though? It's funny. You're putting out these numbers, and they don't seem that bad, though, right? Like, just in terms of, like, pure investment. Like,
well, if you get paid $10 million and your movie grosses $100 million, yeah, that seems like a success. I get it.
Right. I'm just saying, when you're looking at the guy, like, if you give a guy $10 million and he brings back $60, it doesn't seem that awful.
Right, except that, like, your now, paycheck is just one line item on a budget, so, like, maybe the budget of the movie was, like, $80 million because your 10's in there. So now if you only bring in a gross of $100, like, you know, the Mandels, they're not going to be happy with that.
I get that, but I would just think, in terms of the numbers, I would have anticipated hearing, like, a negative or a more one-to-one, like a wash.
Right, right.
But, yeah. No.
So then rounding out the top five is a very curious name for more reasons than one. George Clooney says here, once untouchable, his box office returns have waned to $6.70 for every $1 paid. He is still beloved by those who see his films. Hail Caesar was enjoyed by critics, but fared modestly at the box office. Money Monster, I haven't heard of any of these. I've heard of Caesar, but not Hail Caesar. Money Monster performed a little better, but Clooney's average takes a big hit from 2015's Tomorrowland, which barely grossed more than its eye-watering $190 million budget.
Christ.
But... that doesn't matter, because George Clooney is the hero of this conversation for this reason. This week, he cashed out, and I see their trucks everywhere. What's the name of the tequila company? Calamios or something like that?
I don't know. I can't say. I'm not into tequila, so I wouldn't have been someone who really followed it.
Yeah, right on. Right, and I see their trucks everywhere, but I always key in on it in bumper-to-bumper traffic because they show all their awards on the back of the truck. You know, best tequila at this, you know, at this World Fair, and this, you know, award winner at this, and la la la. And they have like the laurels over, like it's like kind of like when they do cons, like films that scored high at cons or Sundance or something. They do the laurels over it. So I always look at all their awards, but I don't look at the brand name. But he cashed out of some tequila company and got like $233 million.
Jesus,
that's a nice payday.
The overall sale was like $1 billion, right?
Yeah, that's what I read, something like that. And it's like, wow. Juxtapose him with Johnny Depp. Like, now that's. Like, how come there are some people like George Clooney who do seem to do the right thing with their dough, and then there's so many people who just piss away their money and end up broke because all the vultures are circling them, all the Mandels in their little ecosystem, like all are like leeches sucking them dry.
Yeah, but would you say that Mandel was sucking Depp dry, or was Depp sucking himself dry?
Oh, okay. Well, they're the management group,
so
right?
Weird.
So you think that they would. All these guys need to go to like a Robert Kiyosaki class or something and like learn about like rich dad, poor dad, like how to create passive streams. So what did Clooney do? Now, for all I know, he was out there like literally picking the agave or whatever in Mexico. Like all tequila by law, in order to be called tequila, has to be made in Mexico. So for all I know, same thing with like bourbon. To be called bourbon, it has to come from like Kentucky. I could be totally wrong, but something like that.
So wait a minute. I was thinking of what's that Texas vodka, but that's vodka though. What's that one?
Like Tito's handmade vodka.
Vodka. That's vodka. Right. Right. Never mind. Go ahead.
Right on. Right on. So for all I know, this company was started by him. It's his formula or recipe. It was, you know, they were making the agave or whatever on his farm. I don't know. I'm assuming that he invested in it and was one of the early investors. And now that it's sold, he's just getting his dough out, and that's
right.
The extent of it. And maybe he did a couple of, like, you know, in Japan, like in Lost in Translation, maybe he did a couple of commercials with the tequila, like Bill Murray in Lost in Translation.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know his involvement in it. I had never heard of his involvement in it until this week. But I'm assuming it's that, and if so, it's like magnifique. You gave somebody, you know, $15 million 12 years ago from your ER money, and look at you now, cashing out with $233 million. That's how it's done. Ashton Kutcher, another guy, invests in tech companies. For all I know, he's going to go broke investing in tech companies. But another dude who seems pretty smart takes his dough from syndication and is one of the early, you know, seed investors in tech companies. And he's really into it, too. He's not like some teacher who hates kids but is playing for retirement. He loves tech. So it seems like all these stars and, like, especially basketball players, celebrities, they need a Jiminy Cricket, but they need a Jiminy Cricket that can teach them financial sense.
Well, you know, and here's the thing, though. The thing that I'll say, whether – because Clooney could have just as likely busted on this tequila deal. Like, the company could have gone under. He could have lost his whole investment. But there's something about, first of all, like, when I hear that he was that successful, it kind of makes me like him a little bit more, where it's like, ah, that was awesome. Like, good for you.
Right.
Like, for whatever reason, I don't know the guy, I shouldn't care, but I feel like, oh, that's awesome. Like, I love hearing that. Even on the flip side, when you hear that someone busted out, like, remember Randy Brown? He played, you know, he was like a backup point guard on those Bulls teams,
right,
that won,
right,
through 96 and 98.
Right.
Like, he lost his NBA money, but he lost his NBA money through, like, legitimate attempts at investment. And there's something about that where I even come away going, like, I still give it to him. Like, whenever, I think he's an assistant coach, and whenever I still see him somehow, I don't look at that negatively, because
right,
he attempted to do something positive.
He swung,
like,
and
even
he missed.
If you
at least he
out,
swung.
What?
He swung and he missed, but at least he swung. And he didn't, like, miss because he was, like, you know, in South Beach screwing hoes and drinking 30
right,
grand worth of wine every month. He tried to do something good with it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. He had that proverbial fireman in his life who
right,
said, Randy, maybe you should try this. Now, maybe that fireman should have shut up in that instant.
Right.
But it was still, at least, I mean, how sickening does that have to be like a Johnny Depp? Now, he can still go out and make movies and make millions, or be like an Antoine Walker. You blew out $100 million.
Right.
Now he doesn't, I don't even think he owns a car. I think he Ubers everywhere.
No, really? That's
yeah,
expensive.
Yep. Yeah. No, but I guess he doesn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, no one will invite him over. He's a drag, actually.
I mean, can you imagine that? Like, that just has to be so sickening. And I think there's something about coming from some kind of keeping either some kind of grounded background or keeping a grounded person in your life.
Right.
That does that.
Dude, we all need this, because also this week I was reading, and this is from, what's the website? Well, it's from moneyish.com, so take that for what it's worth. It could be total bullshit. I don't know. Next to Business Insider, I'm almost not going to trust Moneyish. I would trust Mandel.com, but not moneyish.com. But if you're to believe this story, this is extremely scary. According to this, about one in four Americans literally have no emergency savings, Jones. A survey released Tuesday by Bankrate.com. Now that I'll trust. Money-ish? Bankrate.com? I trust. This survey found that 24% don't even have a single dollar saved for an emergency. And that's just one of many surveys showing how little we have saved. A survey released in January by Bankrate found that nearly 60% of Americans wouldn't have enough savings to pay for a $500 expense if it came up unexpectedly. So your kid breaks, her leg, and your insurance will only cover, up to a certain amount or whatever, and you have to pay $500. People won't be able to pay that, apparently. So that's scary shit right there, dude.
It always shocks me when I hear those stats. And then you present it in terms of a family. Like, I do not understand. And I'm not going to act like I'm this financially secure guy, or depending upon what the emergency could be, is that I could completely handle it. But when I hear things as base as a dollar.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then literally living check to check.
When I hear you present something like $500, like to cover a broken leg, and it's a family.
Right.
Like, okay, what are you? I can see where someone in my position, where I'm like, hey, I'm responsible for myself. If I screw myself up, fine. But like, when you have like kids, how do you get to that? Like, how?
Yeah, no doubt, dude. And this is why
I'm not saying that, like,
you are a hero of mine. You have passive streams of income. And do you have any debt, Jones?
Not really, no.
Do you have a note on your passive line of income? Does that count?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have that. I have a mortgage. But other than that, no debts. Awesome. Fist bump.
No, that is a huge part of it.
That's it, dude. People are maxing out their cards. So in this same Money-ish article, I'm quoting now, we are more worried about paying for our next vacation than about saving enough for retirement. That's the finding of a study released this week by Country Financial, I trust them, in which Americans report being more concerned about affording that vacation, 36%, than having adequate retirement savings, 32%. That may explain in part why more than half of Americans will be broke when we retire.
Well, and I'll go back to what we were talking about earlier. Blaming it on the phones, blaming it on selfie world. Yeah. How much do you think... Well, social media, really. Social media contributes to that, where you would put a vacation on a credit card.
Totally. Oh, I mean, you see, especially out here in Ivory Tower land, you see, my kids are always like, how come we can't go to Park City, Utah? And I'm like, because we can't. Like, that's just not, I mean, I'm glad for your friends that they were able to do that, but we're not them. Like, we're just normal people who have a house and... You know, I have a 14-year-old car, for fuck's sakes. Like, I mean, like, we're just doing our thing, man. But we're not going to put it on the Visa, so sorry. And I don't know that their friends are doing that, but it sounds like a lot of people do. So it's very difficult for us to kind of keep up with the Joneses, pardon the pun, out here because of Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and stuff.
I think that, honest to God, I think that has played such a huge, it's unbelievable the role that social media, I think, has played in people's mindsets and how they like present their lives and how they actively live their lives. Like whenever I go into my wallet, because I have my debit card and my credit card on top of one another. And every time, like, I go to pull out the cards and if the credit card comes out, I'm like, not that card.
Yeah, really? Why do you have it even?
I do everything not to use that card. Now, I've heard some people say that, well, actually, what you should do is always use your credit card and just pay it off every month. Because if there's any identity theft, the credit card company will take care of that. But if it's identity theft on your debit card, that's your money. The credit card company, that's their money.
Yeah, I hear that.
I get the idea behind that. Maybe I should think about doing that a little more. But I just get in my head, like, I don't want to touch a credit card. I don't want to touch it.
Right. No, I dig that, man. And that's like a bygone era, like, mindset. Like, I spend the money I have. Now in America, we all spend that. And that's what really scares me, dude, because the next time that there's a 2008, the next time there's like a financial downturn and 60% of Americans don't even have a fucking dollar, like, holy shit, man. Like, right. We didn't learn anything in 2008.
Right.
And no, I'll absolutely. Be honest, man, I'm just getting back to like the 2008 like level of like savings and stuff. I'm just finally getting back there. So it's been hard. And there were times when I was scraping the ship was like scraping the bottom, and I could hear the metal on the rocks, and I'm like, oh Jesus, I can see how you lose things. You can lose it all. So I definitely empathize.
And that's when passive streams of income are critical, and that's why I bring up, if you feel so inclined, you can support us.
That's right.
On Patreon.com, go to Shit Dudes Say with Jones and Mike.
That's right.
And, you know, if you feel inclined to give a little income,
so long
we'll
as you're
there to take it.
Yeah, so long as your visa's maxed out, what's another $5 a month at patreon.com/Jones and Mike? I mean, either that, like, what are you going to do? Are you going to join Amway? Are you going to join USANA like your cousin wants you to do? That's not passive income. So long as you're not going to do any of that, $5 a month at patreon.com/Jones and Mike. Put it to good use. We are on a mission from God, Jones, to share the bliss of living debt free. And you're my shining beacon on the hill for that. You and George Clooney, you guys have a lot more in common than you knew.
I never would have thought we had much in common, but we do have that in common.
You are the anti Johnny Depp.
Yeah. And the smoldering good looks.
That's right. And you're like the nouveau George Clooney. You're like the George Clooney before he sold out and married, what's his old lady's name? Huma or something?
No, Huma is...
Oh, that's Wiener's old lady.
Yeah, I know. What is her name?
She's like a UN, like, humanitarian lawyer or something.
I don't want to look it up either.
Yeah, but you are the new
Mrs.
George...
Mrs. Clooney.
She's Mrs. Clooney. It's something exotic. Like, she's from, like, the Maldives or something.
Right.
So you're the new George Clooney, dude. You're financially independent in many ways. You have a nest egg, feathered. You have passive streams of income. You have salt and pepper hair. And you even have some well-defined pecs that I'm imagining George has. Congratulations.
Right.
Don't you?
I take care of myself.
Move one. Prove it. Nice, nice. I saw that, bro.